I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're Building Bridges. Now, an extraordinary forum, Lift the Blockade, the embargo against Cuba now. The embargo is absurdly cruel. And like many other policies targeting Latin Americans, the cruelty is actually the point. It is never acceptable for us to use cruelty as a leverage against everyday people, exacting a high human cost, stifling the development of the Cuban economy, and making daily life harder for Cuban families.
We condemn the U.S. government's inhumane treatment of Cubans and demand it lift the economic embargo.
Let's listen to the moderator bring forth the principal speakers and activists for self-determination of the Cuban people who demand lift the blockade against Cuba.
Cuba sin bloqueo no.
Cuba sin bloqueo no. Cuba sin
bloqueo no.
¡Viva la solidaridad entre los pueblos! ¡Cuba sí! ¡Cuba sí!
So we do want to welcome to the space two comrades and friends of the U.S. from Cuba that just walked in. Yuri Gala, who's the deputy permanent representative to Cuba's U.N. mission. And we do want to ask our comrade and friend, Ambassador Pedro Luis Pedroso Cuesta, to come in and say hi for a few seconds, because he is on his way to the airport, and he actually stopped by to say hi. And so we want to make sure that Ambassador Cuesta gets the time to say hi.
I was not intended to spoil your very, very nice crafted program. I was not in the, you know, in the list, so you're a little bit provocative in bringing me up here. And I know that Ambassador Yuri has a statement, and also a colleague from the Women's Federation and ICAB. They also have like the master presentation, so I'm not going to rob that from them. But it's a pleasure indeed to say hello to all of you and to see you in these big numbers here in this event. We had this session last year at the People's Forum, and it was a very successful event. We were delighted because we saw a lot of people there. But this year, we are seeing that you have double or triple those numbers. How you people, you have organized it, this, and you, so many organizations and coalitions in making this possible. This proves the strength of unity, because you have got united in preparing this, in organizing this. I'm seeing a lot of faces, and I'm recognizing now the many faces there at the table, people who have been there for many years, but also new people. That is also very encouraging, is the new generations coming up, and that is also very important. So thank you first very much to the organizers for putting this together and bringing so many people. Thank you very much to all of you. And to share with us some sessions of exchanges and talks on the need to lift the embargo, to lift the blockade, and what we need to do together to make that possible. We have seen some movement that is very much a movement originated from the root, originated from you. If there is something happening outside, whatever it is, it's because you're doing that possible. And because you're bringing together the voices that feel that this is just unfair, not only is immoral, not only is illegal, but it's also unfair to Cuba. So thank you very much for that. I'm pretty sure this is going to be another success. And I'm pretty sure that this will be, again, the basis for further action in order to lift the blockade, which is the main purpose behind this agenda. I also want to welcome our very powerful delegation to the session of the UN Commission on Women. It's all a women delegation. So we have to talk about discrimination the other way around. Discrimination against men, but we are very happy to see our women in such a powerful manner representing Cuban women at the commission. This was just a joke. They know how much we appreciate them. So thank you very much.
Viva! No to the blockade. No al bloqueo.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ambassador, for those words.
At this time, I'd like to introduce my brother in struggle and comrade, Brother Omawale Clay. who is representing from the New York City Council, our brother who could not be here, Brother Charles Barron, a fighter who introduced Resolution 0285. And Omawale will share with you and bring you a message from the council member.
Peace, comrades. First, on behalf of Councilmember Charles Barron, I bring you greetings. But as Charles and us all know, I also bring you greetings from Sister Viola Plummer, chair of the December 12th movement. And one of the histories I first want to say about the resolution, which is a simple resolution to do the right thing. I had to confront one of the council people last night, and now we're up to 24 council members. Let me just pay respects to somebody who is always dear to us in the December 12th movement, who taught us so much about the international situation, our brother and comrade, Miguel Alfonso, who is no longer with us. Many of you may not know Miguel, but Miguel was in the human rights struggle inside Geneva and around the world. But he taught us patiently that there are different battlefields. And in each battlefield, there's a particularity to the confrontation, to the strategy and tactics of that battlefield. He taught us how to operate inside the United Nations. And the culmination of that was the World Conference Against Racism in South Africa a number of years ago. But he also was instructive in terms of our struggle inside the New York City Council, whose appearance would make it seem that it's gotten more progressive. But in reality, it is still controlled by a machine that has the politics of capitalism and imperialism, intimidation, and if you disagree, you get punished for that. So it's been a battle, but we're committed, and the councilman wanted me to say to you, we're committed as long as we have also council members like Councilmember Brewer, Gail Brewer, that we will win that battle. I've always had the privilege inside the December 12th movement to do a lot of the propaganda and slogans. We created No Justice, No Peace. We created Whose Streets, Our Streets. We created the slogans, What's Coming, War. But one of the most powerful ones we created, because I had an opportunity to go to Cuba in 1990 for a very historic conference, Malcolm X Into the 90s. And at that conference, I had an opportunity to listen to Fidel Castro lay out one of the most historic battles for Africa, which was the Battle of Cuita Carnaval. That battle, many folks, as time goes on, will learn how important it was and critical it was for African people that that battle be won. And Cuba laid its life on the line, not just in blood, but in even to the point of where undermining the possibility of the revolution in Cuba to build the solidarity it wanted to build with Africa. We African people have never forgotten that and will never forget that. And so one of the slogans that was created there was Africa called and Cuba answered. And so we come. And so let me just say, we come to see about Cuba because Cuba came to see about us.
Sure.
We are now, I'm now honored to introduce Gail Walker, Director of IFCO Pastors for Peace. I have been, had the chance to travel twice to Cuba with Gail, and she is a tremendous leader in the Cuba Solidarity Movement and in bringing folks from across the United States down to Cuba to learn more about the Cuban reality. And so really great to have her here today and the continued support for IFCO Pastors for Peace. So please give a warm welcome to Gail Walker.
Thank you so much, Tamara. I just friends those here in the room and, of course, those online. A good afternoon to our dear friend, Ambassador Pedroso and Ambassador Gala, and all of our friends here, our honored guests from Cuba, from the Federation of Cuban Women, from the National Jurists, and, of course, from our friends at ECAP. We're grateful to have you here. As the director not only of IFCO Pastors for Peace, but as a proud co-chair of the National Network on Cuba, I bring you heartfelt greetings. We're gathering at a very important time, a very difficult time, not only for our friends and our family in Cuba, but for all of us who seek a better world. There's an old saying in the Black community here, and I think that it generally applies not only to folk of color, but all of us who struggle for justice. It's a saying that goes like this: when white people catch a cold, Black people catch pneumonia. How many people of you have heard that? Right? It sounds a little odd, but the reality is that it's another way of saying, loosely translated, that hardships for privileged, often privileged people is deadly for those of us who are stuck at the bottom ladder of the economic rung. And that is why Cuba is such an important symbol, such an important expression of support, of solidarity for people of color, people who are struggling for justice. Cuba is our North Star. So that's why we're here, right? Of course, we're here to lift up and defend our sister nation, Cuba, and its dogged right to self-determination. But perhaps more to the point, we're here because we recognize and deeply respect and admire all that Cuba has done to endure and has had to endure over the past six decades in the shape of a brutal blockade. And yet she and her beautiful people continue to keep rising, not just for Cuba, but for the world. That's why we stand with Cuba. And we beam with pride when we think of our Cuban family. Countless examples, but we know about Cuba's medical internationalism, hundreds of doctors that have traveled to dozens of countries to provide urgently needed medical care. We know about the recent passage of the Family Code, passed by a countrywide referendum in which there was really a focus on the needs of how to define family, which has been an incredible example that we and the rest of the world continue to look to. And then, of course, lastly, I just want to point to Cuba's position as the head of G77 plus China. That's a really important position that Cuba has taken on. This year, Cuba's looked, has for the first time in history, been in this position to create this incredible presence at this incredibly important moment, not only for the island, but for developing countries. So I just want to say that Cuba's responsibility is tremendous. It's tremendous for Cuba, but it's tremendous for those of us who look to Cuba as an example. I want to just really lastly say, many of us, I'm going to use the example of the Olympics. How many people, if you're watching the Olympics, root for Cuba? Come on, I know, right? So I don't care if it's baseball, if it's volleyball, even if it's something like wrestling. I don't know anything about wrestling, but I'm over there rooting for Cuba because I know Cuba represents me, represents us. Lastly, I just want to end with a quote from our beloved Fidel Castro, who said, "The equal right of all citizens to health, education, work, food, security, culture, science, and well-being. That is the same rights that we proclaimed when we began our struggle. In addition to those which emerge from our dreams of justice and equality for all inhabitants of the world. And that is what I wish for." That's what Fidel Castro said. And I think we can certainly say that that's what we all wish for and will continue to, why we will continue standing loving solidarity with Cuba. So bye-bye, blockade. Abajo, blockade. Unblock Cuba. Cuba is not alone. We are here with you.
It is a big honor to introduce Professor William Leo Grande from the American University in Washington, D.C. Please give him a warm welcome.
I'm sorry I can't be with you in person, but I can feel the energy in the room. Just a few weeks ago, Juan Gonzalez, who's the Latin American director at the National Security Council, described Biden's policy as neither Trump's nor Obama's, but something in between. Last May, Biden relaxed some of the sanctions that Trump put on Cuba. He made it a little bit easier to travel, not as easy as it should be. And he made it a little bit easier to send remittances to family members in Cuba. That was in response to pressure from you, from progressive Democrats in Congress, and from progressive governments in Latin America. Will Biden do more? Or will policy stay frozen more or less where it is until at least after the 2024 election? I think it depends in part on how much more political pressure can be brought to bear on the administration to follow up with some additional moves. And the most important one is indeed taking Cuba off the State Department's list of state supporters of international terrorism. As you talk to people about this issue, some of them are going to ask you, well, why should we do Cuba the favor of lifting the embargo or taking them off the terrorism list? And the answer is that normalization of U.S.-Cuban relations is in the best interests of the people of both the United States and Cuba. Some years ago, in explaining why Cuba and the United States needed to get along with one another, Cuban diplomat Ricardo Alarcón said, "We are near neighbors, and unlike people, we can't move away." There are many, many issues of mutual interest that Cuba and the United States share, and that can only be effectively managed by cooperating with one another. Environmental protection, public health, as we've just seen with the pandemic, and migration. In the last 2 years of his presidency, President Obama signed 23 agreements with Cuba. Donald Trump ignored or violated every single one of them. And Biden so far has only restarted cooperation on two of those issues, on migration and on law enforcement. There's a lot more that could be done. Educational, scientific, and cultural exchanges obviously benefit both countries. Before Trump, more than 600,000 non-Cuban American travelers from the United States were visiting Cuba every year. There was a flowering of cultural exchanges, music, and art during the last 2 years of the Obama administration. And Cuban advances in biotechnology could obviously benefit the United States. Most importantly, the lung cancer vaccine that Cuba is currently working to develop with Roswell Cancer Institute in Buffalo, New York. There's potential economic benefits for both countries. Cuba and the United States are natural trading partners because they're so close. U.S. farmers would love to be able to trade more with Cuba. The progressives in the Cuban American community can be a natural economic bridge between our two countries. Lots of U.S. businesses are interested in doing business in Cuba, as we saw during the Obama opening. And there are benefits for Cuban Americans. More cooperative relations between Cuba and the United States make it easier for Cuban Americans to travel, to visit their families, to send remittances, to help their families. And Donald Trump restricted both of those things. Biden has loosened them a little bit, but there's still more to go. Finally, U.S. policy towards Cuba is doing serious damage to our relations with the rest of the world. No one else in the world supports the U.S. embargo. The United Nations has voted for 30 years in a row for the United States to end the embargo, with almost no one else supporting the U.S. position. Friction with our allies in Europe because of the extraterritorial reach of certain elements of the embargo, like Title III of the Helms-Burton legislation. The complication of our relations with Latin America is perhaps the most serious. It's one of the main reasons that Obama changed policy in 2014. And one of his senior officials called U.S. policy towards Cuba an albatross around the neck of U.S. cooperation with the rest of Latin America. Just last year, we saw the Summit of the Americas nearly collapse because of a partial boycott over the exclusion of Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua. Today, almost every government in Latin America, every major government, is led by progressives. There's a fundamental contradiction today between Joe Biden saying he stands with the Cuban people and continuing a policy aimed at strangling the Cuban economy, which increases the misery of the Cuban people. And that's why the last three popes have all opposed the U.S. embargo, including the Polish Pope, John Paul II, no friend of communism. The next step to moving U.S. policy in the right direction is to take Cuba off the list of state sponsors of terrorism. It doesn't belong on the list, and it's important to keep demanding that the Biden administration do an honest review of Cuba's designation and take Cuba off that list. When Secretary of State Blinken traveled to Latin America last year, he promised President Petro in Colombia that the United States would, in fact, review Cuba's designation. They haven't done it yet. Continuing the embargo is sacrificing U.S. interests just to satisfy a small constituency of Cuban Americans in South Florida and their congressional friends at the expense of everyone else in both the United States and in Cuba. And the irony is that those folks are not going to vote for Joe Biden anyway. Normalizing U.S.-Cuban relations is not a gift or a favor that the United States is giving to the Cuban government. The United States should normalize relations and end the embargo because it's the right thing to do, because it would serve the interests of both the people in the United States and the people of Cuba. Don't let Joe Biden forget it. Thank you.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Professor Leo Grande, for being with us. Don't let Joe Biden forget.
We have the video from Mr. McGovern.
This is Congressman Jim McGovern from Massachusetts. And I want to thank the sponsors and the entire volunteer staff who are making this weekend's conference possible. Just a few years ago, I thought the United States and Cuba were well on their way on the path to normal relations in every sphere. President Obama was announcing a sweeping set of changes to U.S. policy and regulations that over the next 2 years opened U.S. and Cuba up to one another in ways not imagined for over 50 years. I thought that finally our two peoples would have the opportunity to create a new future together. But I was wrong. The election of Donald Trump, who over 4 years gradually overturned President Obama's actions toward Cuba, as he even returned Cuba to the state sponsor of terrorism list. The increased financial restrictions, the tightening of the embargo, the SST list, coincided with the pandemic, which brought nearly every economy in the world to its knees, including that of Cuba. While I had hoped that things would change under newly elected President Biden, he and his administration have moved too slowly. As many Cubans took to the streets to demand social and economic change, as well as political change, U.S. economic and financial restrictions remained unchanged, and the Cuban people suffered. I was in Havana in December, and I have never seen the Cuban people facing such hardship. Hundreds of thousands feel so hopeless about their future on the island that they feel like they have no choice but to leave. And I was angry that U.S. policy was contributing to that suffering. It's the kind of anger that brought me back to Congress more committed than ever to push and push this administration to change its policies, to stop contributing to the hardships being suffered by the Cuban people in our name. If the U.S. government wants to end the mass migration from Cuba, then it needs to take responsibility for the role America's policies play in forcing people to leave their homes, their families, their culture, and their language. So this conference couldn't be more timely or more important. In the U.S. House of Representatives, we face a very difficult situation. Over the next 2 years, the Republican majority will bring back Cold War policies on Cuba. We might not be able to defeat them. I can only hope that the Senate will not imitate the House. In the House, we must go back to the basics and rebuild, member by member, the commitment to change U.S. policy toward Cuba. It's hard work, and it requires each of you. It requires every national organization and grassroots network to build local coalitions and grassroots support. That's the kind of coalition no member of Congress can ignore. Cores of such diverse and active coalitions, we need to rebuild or reactivate them if we're going to create the change we want to see in U.S. policy. Right now, one of the most important tasks we can take on is to press the Biden administration to remove Cuba from the state sponsor of terrorism list. I hope everyone is planning to participate in the national call-in to the White House this coming week, demanding that President Biden remove Cuba from the state sponsor of terrorist list. And please know that there are groups of House members and senators who are also pushing the administration to remove Cuba from the SST list. Last week, a group of bipartisan senators introduced S653, a bill to lift the trade embargo on Cuba. The leaders of this effort are Senators Klobuchar, Moran, Murphy, Marshall, and Warren. It demonstrates that in the Senate, there is still a bipartisan group of senators willing to stand up for change. It also opens the opportunity for other initiatives in areas like travel and trade. And I can't thank you enough for allowing me this time to welcome you and express my support for all of your hard work. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to an extraordinary conference. Lift the blockade. The embargo is absurdly cruel. And like many other policies targeting Latin Americans, the cruelty itself is the point. It is never acceptable to use cruelty as a point of leverage against everyday people, stifling the development of the Cuban economy and making daily life harder for Cuban families, weaponizing food and medicines. That for 60 years we've had this embargo, and it has done nothing for the Cuban people to implement regime change. That is not their position. Make sure this coming week to call the White House, say, President Biden, we demand that you remove Cuba from the state-sponsored terrorism list, and to support the bill that is floating around Congress to lift the blockade now, and in your own local legislators, support those symbolic bills that say we reject the Biden analysis that supports the embargo, and we demand the lifting of the blockade against Cuba for U.S. hegemonistic imperialist interests. So with that, I hope you learned and were stimulated and excited by the growing yearly efforts to do what? Lift the blockade. And I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash saying lift the blockade.
Cuba si Yankinos continue to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we the people for another world is possible if we work really hard to make it so.